Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
After more than 15 years of working with couples, it has come to my attention that most people have absolutely no idea what they're getting into when they say, I do. The traditional vows to love, honor, and cherish have often been replaced by more personal vows, and while those can be touching and meaningful, they often remain somewhat nebulous. The old vows of for better or worse, in sickness and in health, etc., seem to spell things out more clearly, but even those can be too ill-defined for most people. So the reason I'm given for why a couple got married is often, well, we were in love. And while I'm a big fan of love and I think that's great, there never seemed to be much more of a plan. So what should a couple do beyond loving each other? Well, to help answer that question, I'm joined today by Dr. Wendy Patrick. She's an attorney, a behavioral specialist with a PhD in theology. So, Dr. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about what I think is a really, really important question, challenge. I'm not quite sure how to phrase it.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for tackling this important question, challenge, whatever we want to call it, because it affects everybody. I mean, unless you don't want to get married and you take a vow of celibacy, this is an issue that you're going to have to grapple with. You know, and you're right to say that too many people rush into it without even thinking about what does it mean to be in love? How do you know you're in love? And one of the most interesting answers to that question has to do with whether or not love is the genuine kind of love that's going to last. Are you feeling like you're in love because of the way you feel when you're with the other person, or because of the way you want them to feel? In other words, are you inward focused, outward focused? Is it about you? Is it about them? Is it about the chemistry between you? And if the latter, I hope that that is tried and tested over a period of time, years, before you have to distinguish it from mere infatuation. So that's the first question. You're right.
Well, and I think that's a really important way of looking at things that I don't think I've actually really looked at before in terms of is it an inward or an outward feeling. And again, you're right. There's this huge difference between being in love and loving somebody, and I always hate it. It's like, well, I love my spouse, but I'm not in love with him anymore. And it's like, oh, my gosh, you don't understand what that means, you know.
If we had a dime for every time we heard that, we could retire. So is there such a thing as being in love? That's one of the questions that psychologists have grappled with for years. They've looked at well-being and self-sacrifice and altruism and forgiveness and all of these topics to try to determine which of those, what constellation of those feelings and emotions make you believe that you're in love. And then are you really? Should we maybe not be talking about this differently? You know, there's such a thing as compatibility on top of chemistry, and maybe we should give some credence to that as well in determining longevity of a marriage.
Well, I'm always of the impression, and it doesn't matter what this is. I mean, you know, when you go back to the nature versus nurture and the this versus that, and I always say it's not either or, it's both and. You have to have some components of all of it. And I guess what most people don't understand is that you can fall in and out of love with your partner. And I can't remember, there's this great quote, and I don't remember who said it, which is really awful, but you know, that they said that the secret to their marriage was that they never fell out of love with each other at the same time, which I think is really good. You know, because when you live with somebody, they can drive you crazy.
Well, right. And again, that's why I go back to the compatibility part of this, because there are couples that have chemistry that can light up a room that don't have any compatibility. Hey, those are short-term relationships generally. There's probably no possible way to keep short-term chemistry alive for a lifetime. But then you come back to the compatibility part about it. You know, great expectations create great relationships in the short term, but great expectations also have to be tempered with the kind of view you have of your marriage. In other words, marriage is not a contract, it's a covenant. And if you're not willing to enter into a covenant, you should think about just dating. I mean, that marriage is not marriage is not for you. And then again, though, do you want to just randomly date your entire life, or would you rather find that special person with whom you're willing to make a covenant? And if so, you're looking for chemistry plus compatibility, not just sparks flying on the first couple of dates.
Right. And that's really interesting, because you did write a very interesting piece for Psychology Today titled Great Expectations, which I love, How Unrealistic Optimism Hurts Romance. And, I mean, one of the things that I tell my couples is expectations are the gremlins of relationships. You know, especially because we don't necessarily check in with our partner going, here's my expectation. Are you on board for that? And we hold people accountable, you know, in our heads. And a lot of times the problem is that we don't even realize that we have those expectations, because it's just something we always thought, well, this is the way it's supposed to be, and never bothered to think about, well, is that realistic for this relationship? But what do you, when you talked about this, when you wrote about this, What is unrealistic optimism when it comes to romantic relationships? That's a really interesting concept that I had never heard before.
Well, unrealistic optimism is really the belief that things are going to be perfectly fine and you don't have to hold up your end of the bargain in as many ways as you actually do, because everything feels so good that you stop recognizing you've got to work at this and make sure that you don't take relational risks. Risks can be anything from a night out on the town with your girlfriends that ends up having optics that are beyond what you anticipated, not taking the time to listen to your partner when he or she comes home from work, not attending to the needs of your partner or being receptive enough. Unrealistic optimism means you believe the relationship is going to be great no matter what you do. That's not true. It does depend on you, and as your successful couples no doubt share with you, although they're successful, I'm not sure they'd be in your office. That's right. But as their relationships improve with your no doubt excellent advice, that's what you probably explain to them, that both partners have to be attuned to each other's interests. You can't be unrealistically optimistic, or else that the relationship isn't going to last or the quality is going to suffer, one of the two, sometimes both.
Well, and that's a really interesting statement, because a friend of mine many years ago, he was going to get married for the third time, and he said to me, you know, what he asked me, and this was long before I was a therapist. It was one of the reasons why I think I became one. But he said to me, he says, do you think I should get married again? And I looked at him, I said, well, only if you because he believed there was a difference between courtship and marriage behavior. And I said, you need to change, because he used to think that courtship behavior was better. And I said, unless you flip those, that marriage behavior becomes better than your courtship behavior, please don't get married again. Because
great advice.
I mean, I think that's what happens is, you know, people plan their weddings. They don't plan their marriages, because we're in love and everything's going to be smooth sailing. And then they hit that first giant wave that swamps the marriage boat, and then it's like, well, wait a minute, this wasn't supposed to happen. So that's kind of, I think, what you're talking about these unrealistic optimism that somehow, I mean, and it's that whole soulmate thing, which just don't even get me started on that whole concept.
Well, it's true. No, absolutely right. And, you know, what we can liken it to is kind of the way we behave in terms of our health. We may, you know, there are lots of people that, you know, enjoy chocolate and smoking and drinking, and although chocolate's actually good for you, so let's take that one off the list.
In moderation.
Yeah, let's just talk about moderation. There are so many people that take health risks with unrealistic optimism. Risk taking is certainly not defined to relationships, but if we look at that kind of behavior as an analogy, we can understand how when you're young, as many people are when they get married, let's call young below 50, shall we? But relatively young and in good health, you tend to take risks in many aspects of your life. Maybe it's financially, maybe it's relationally. But risk-taking in life and unrealistic optimism often go together, because you think you're invincible. So too, as you've explained to countless couples you've no doubt seen, you can't simply believe things are going to go well, and it doesn't have anything to do with you and your behavior. You know, every single day, I call this the reverse selfie. If you make it about your partner, you're going to have a dynamite relationship. Now, your listeners are invited to try this if they don't believe me. Take one day, whatever it is, just to try this. Make it all about your partner. What is he or she thinking, feeling? What would they like to do today? What would they like for dinner? What do they like to do? It's absolutely incredible. That investment of time is an investment in the relationship. They may ask you at the end of the day, what the heck happened to you? Well, and what have you done with my spouse?
But that's what I'm talking about, because when we're courting, that's what we do. We are constantly thinking about, you know, what would make my partner happy? What would my partner like? And then suddenly, over time, it turns into, well, what have you done for me lately?
That's it.
And part of this, and what people don't understand, it's habits. It's continuing. Because people say, well, how do you have a long, successful relationship? It's like you keep the behaviors going. Exactly what you say. You ask about the person's day. You don't automatically assume, oh, this is what this person's thinking. I mean, I just celebrated my 32nd wedding anniversary in May. And sometimes
congratulations!
Thank you. But sometimes I look at my husband and I'm going, who are you? I mean, we've been together for 33 years, and sometimes we'll still say things like, oh, wow, you know, because you don't stay stagnant.
That's right, and that's one of the other reasons.
Stagnant, right.
Yeah, keep growing. No, you're absolutely right. And the fact that you keep growing, that all of us do, that's why we have to keep in touch. You know, one of the things about marriage vows, they're usually standardized. People get them off the internet. But think about what your marriage vows would look like if you personalized them. Mm-hmm. And think about, you know, vows renewal ceremonies, or, you know, what a blessing those are. And when you think about doing something like that, you probably are going to have different vows because you've changed. So, too, as you point out, right, 35-year marriage, every 5-10 years, you have different needs and different concerns, whether it's family or health or, you know, everything from finances to geography to professional, personal. If you thought about what those vows renewals would look like every 5 years, there has to be some communication between the two of you, or how does your partner know how you've changed?
Well, and I love that because this whole idea of, you know, the idea that I don't think people have the slightest idea what they're promising.
That's right.
It's like, how do you operationalize what you're promising? What does for better or worse look like? And personally, I happen to go back to just the love, honor, cherish. I actually operationalize those for people. This is what each one of those things mean. And are you willing to engage in that? And I think this is where some of the expectations can come into play because, well, my partner thinks that these words mean the same thing that I think they mean. It's like, oh, no, they don't.
Well, I think that you really hit the nail on the head. Most people haven't even taken the time to think about what they mean to begin with, much less try to actually say, well, in practice, what does that look like? You know, that's one of the other things that, you know, we like to point out is, okay, you know what the words mean, you know what they say, they sound good, you know, everybody seems to have the same vows, but have you ever considered what that would look like in practice? Like, give me an example of what it would be, what it would mean to you to honor, to cherish your partner. What's an example of that? Many people have never thought that through. And then you're right, they hit on hard times. Maybe it's a health issue. Maybe, God forbid, it's a contact with an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, the kinds of things mm-hmm. that tend to derail or at least really shake marriages early on. What does that look like in light of the vows that you took? And if it's just been a short-lived relationship that dashes into marriage, you're right that it's more fun planning the wedding than thinking about the day-to-day of having to keep those vows. So it would be great if you could impart that wisdom to your couples before they end up in your office, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, and you know this as well as I do, that the people who take advantage of premarital work is really slim because people think, oh, we don't need this. We know everything. And it's like, oh, you have no idea what marriage is until you're in it.
That's right.
But I love the idea about having these conversations because that's also a really good time to have the conversation about boundaries, about what are the things that are completely unacceptable. Because, like we said, for better or worse, what does that mean? You know, there's this whole thing about there's an expectation of monogamy, but what does that mean? You know, I mean, I get all these questions all the time about, well, if I'm talking to my ex or if I'm talking to somebody on the internet, like on Facebook, is that cheating? It's like, well, it all depends, you know.
That is such a great point because monogamy means exactly that. It doesn't mean that you're able to explore relationships extramaritally. You know, like one of the things that, you know, we say in church is, you know, you talk about Christian marriages, you don't expose yourself to temptation to begin with because everybody's weak. And so many couples think to themselves, oh, well, I can pursue friendships, quote unquote, with people online, or maybe rekindle a friendship with an old flame. That is asking for trouble because all of us are weak when it comes to temptation. Why go there? I'm sure that's the advice you give to your couples as well. Why open that door to begin with?
And well, what I say to people is anybody in your life, whether it's friends, family, coworkers, I don't care who it is, needs to be supportive of the marriage, because it's usually, you know, frequently what happens in at a wedding ceremony is, you know, they ask the entire, you know, all the people who were there to say, will you support these two people in this relationship?
That's right.
Of course, everybody says they will. But that's really, you know, I tell people, if you wouldn't do something with your partner standing right next to you, then you shouldn't be doing it.
And, that's good.
You know, because, you know, and people know. I mean, it's this whole thing about keeping secrets. And it's like, well, you don't necessarily keep secrets. I'm not saying you have to spew everything, every thought that comes into your head, but it's you have this concept that I am in this relationship and I want people around me who are going to support me in this. And, you know, it's like many of my coworkers or people that I run into have never met my husband, but they know I'm married. They know he exists. And, you know, and the same thing with him. I haven't met all of his coworkers, but they know who I am. And I think that that's a really important thing to talk about, because it's hard enough to try to make this through. But if you've got people who don't, and I'm not saying that they're actively undermining your relationship, but if they're not really making that your relationship a priority, then you need to rethink, do I want this person in my life?
That's right. You know, we always say secrets are relationship saboteurs. Unless you're planning a surprise birthday party for your spouse, you should not be keeping secrets. And,
right.
You know, listening to you brought up another really important point, a sign of the times. You talk about people that should be supportive of the marriage. Sadly, we live in a society where marriage is not held in the same, with the same sacrosanct character as it was, let's say, even 50 years ago. So there may be people in your life that know you're married, but don't give it the weight it's due. In other words, they don't hold it with the same respect that we should when we're in a marriage. And that's a problem, because when you're inviting married people out for a night out on the town with you and your single friends, going to a singles bar, meeting new people, you may say, oh, it's, you know, his spouse probably trusts him or her spouse probably doesn't care. But that's devaluing what the marriage is about. And that is the kind of behavior that can get you into trouble. Now, the optics, the optics are really bad too, because we live on video. Somebody's going to have a cell phone camera out.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm.
So whether or not it was, I don't want to say innocent because the scenario sounds bad, but let's say, you know, nothing marriage threatening happened. The optics are in and of themselves marriage threatening all across the board. So we've got to think about that. It's the appearance of impropriety many times other than the actual impropriety. We've seen that in the hashtag MeToo movement. You got to be careful the way you behave and the way it looks to other people. So too within a marriage. Many people say they're supportive of the marriage, but for whatever reason, maybe because they're watching too much reality TV, they will have no problem inviting one of the spouses out somewhere that they probably shouldn't be seen.
So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with attorney and behavior specialist Dr. Wendy Patrick about how what you believe or expect in your relationship influences its health. So if you have questions about how your expectations might be impacting your marriage, I invite you to contact me and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After strategy session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. Or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And I want to get back to this conversation about expectations in relationships and the unrealistic optimism. So how can having positive expectations of a relationship, which actually sounds like a good thing, negatively impact it?
Well, that would be as if they're unrealistic. And, you know, positive expectations usually end up being a self-fulfilling prophecy because of your behavior. What's interesting is sometimes high expectations can create low relational quality, but that's only if you become disappointed because you've set the bar too high.
Yeah.
So, you know how couples compare themselves to other couples they see on Facebook? You know, that's a terrible thing to do because everybody sort of overinflates the satisfaction
right,
and relational quality.
They're not saying, hey, I just had a fight with my husband, or, you know, whatever it might be. I think that was one of the things with Anna Faris and Chris Pratt. You know, she basically said, maybe I shouldn't have put all that positive stuff on, you know, it's like, you think? Because it does.
Yeah.
That's unrealistic expectations, because I will look at that and think, oh, wow, look at these two people. They have it all together. They don't have any problems. What's wrong with me and my marriage?
That's exactly right. And it leads to a contrast effect. And that produces a negative perception of our relationships if they fall short of that ridiculously high, unrealistic bar that we set. Now, maybe we set that bar because we see couples acting it out on TV that seem to have it all together. Although nowadays, I think that they show the drama more than anything else. That seems to be good for ratings. But let's take your Facebook example, because that is a perfect venue to use as an example of people only posting positive things. In real life, it's not like that. And I think intrinsically, most of us recognize that, but that kind of comparison does no one any favors. So these unrealistic high expectations, you expect the world, nobody has it, you don't have it, and you end up being dissatisfied with what other people might look at and say, you've got a wonderful relationship. What are you talking about? But when you're dissatisfied, you begin to behave differently. You complain. You don't cherish the values and the good times that you have. And then that brings your partner down too. And then that's a couple that's destined to have an appointment with you. And it's all because it was all preventable at the outset by having realistic expectations. Or here's a concept. How about just living and loving day to day, cherishing the partner God gave you without holding them to any expectations?
Well, and by the way, not holding them to expectations does not necessarily mean not holding them to standards, because
oh, absolutely. You're right.
You know, and I need to clarify that, because people go, oh, well, you know, that means I could just do whatever I want to do and my partner has to accept it. And it's like, no, they don't. And now you're
and no,
not,
you can't.
But then again, and now you're not honoring or cherishing your partner, because what matters to them needs to be important to you. And again, I'm not saying, when I tell people this, I said, I'm not saying that you have to agree with your partner all the time. But when you say no to your partner, it does serious damage. So I tell people, I said, you need to say yes as often as you can, because there are times when we do have to say no because it's something that's not acceptable to me. And so I have to say no. But I need to make my no's few and far between, because the no's hurt.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And the most important thing about a relationship, particularly a marriage, is you're in control of your behavior. You can make sure your standards are as high as you want to make them, because that's your covenant. You know, whether it's treating them with respect and love and fidelity and all the different things in marriage, we keep all of those, or at least we do our darndest to keep all of those standards. But in terms of expecting your partner is always going to be as perfect as you're trying to be, that's where we run into problem. And I love what you say about saying yes as often as you can. You know, there are lots of ways, if the answer really is no, that we can finesse that. You know, maybe suggesting alternatives, or maybe another time, or, well, let's talk about this. You sometimes rate, you go to the doctor and they say there's a pain scale 1 through 10. There's also a scale you can use with your partner in terms of importance. Mm-hmm. Maybe something is a 10 to you and a 1 to your partner, in which case compromise is justified and makes sense. Maybe you actually want to talk through, you know, what are the different priorities that you have in a relationship, whether it's the way you spend your free time or your money or raising your kids. You know, it's saying yes as much as you can, as you point out, is definitely a way to at least let your partner know you're supportive, or trying to be as supportive as you can, while you're still maintaining your standards for yourself. Because you're right, that is one thing we can never, ever compromise on, is our own behavior. We're in control of that.
Right, which so many people, you know, think that, well, my partner made me do this. It's like, no, you
nope.
No.
Nope.
Yes, your partner did whatever it is they did, and then you have multitudinous options as to what you're going to do. And,
that's right.
You know, it's
options going, matter.
So we were talking about these expectations, and we're talking a little bit about some negative expectations. And I know that there, and that, by the way, this happens to be a truism, that what we believe we will see, we will, you know, if I believe that my partner is behaving in a certain way or does things that I don't like, that's what I'm going to be paying attention to. So how do negative expectations impact a relationship?
Great question. People worry that simply by being afraid something's going to happen, they will make it happen. That in and of itself is not true. That's called superstition, no such thing. But here's how it does happen in reality. You believe the worst and your behavior changes, which actually facilitates your worst fears coming true. Here's the example that couples sometimes suffer. Sometimes people become oversensitive. They are pessimistic. They look at everything through a lens of pessimism and then tend to see their partner behaving badly when, in fact, it's neutral behavior that's being misinterpreted. And then they act accordingly. When you look at the research, it looks like couples who are high rejection sensitive, basically following conflict, it's the negative behavior of one of the partners that's causing the conflict, not just the belief or the worry or the concern that the relationship's going to end or be jeopardized. So it's all tied back to negative behavior, not just pessimism. So the key would be to think through the fears that one has, talk to somebody like you, and then move through them before it translates into bad behavior. That would be a way to prevent the negative consequences.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that, because for many years, I was in relationships and I was always afraid they were going to end. So because I believed that, my behavior was such that I'd either pull away or I'd start
That's
a
it.
Fight or whatever. And then when the relationship broke up, it's like, see? But I didn't realize for years that, no, I had a role in that. I had a role in creating, because of my fear, my behavior. And this is what people don't get. And one of the things is that just because we have behaved this way in the past doesn't mean we can't learn a different way of behaving. So I always get this, you know, in marriages, like, well, my partner just needs to accept this because that's just the way I am. Now, what I tell people, it's like, yes, I can lie about my age. It doesn't change how old I am. That's a truism. I have two children. I can't pretend I don't have them. They're not going back where they came from, thank God. But you know, there are some things we cannot change. You know, how tall we are, how old we are, you know, whatever. But our behavior is always open to changing, and it's a question of, am I willing to investigate other options? Because a lot of people don't know. I mean, I tell my clients, it's like, well, of course you behave this way. How would you not know to do this? Because this is what you grew up with. This is your normal. These are where your expectations come from. But we can change them.
That is, you know, that is such great wisdom. Is there are so many couples that say, well, you knew what you were getting into when you married me, or you know that I have this proclivity, you know that I have a bad temper, you know this, you know that. Why not, instead of, like you said, you know, insist that our characteristics are stable and unchangeable? What could life be like if we actually considered changing some of them? I mean, that's a win-win, isn't it? Wouldn't everyone like to experience more relational quality and have a better relationship and feel better and happier, and not only about your relationship, but about yourself? I mean, how great is it when you're out somewhere and people respond so positively to you, maybe even tell you, gosh, you're got to be the kindest person, or you really handled that well, or thank you for listening. Isn't that wonderful? And why not pursue positive change ourselves, which then will necessarily translate into positive changes in our behaviors? I just don't see the downside there.
Well, and I don't either, except for the fact that, and you know this as well as I do, being a behavioral expert, change is really hard and scary. And people want everybody else to change. I mean, I talk about Leslie World, that, and you're from California, so you'll get this. In Leslie World, when I get on the road, there's not another car on the road. And in Leslie World, my children did everything I wanted them to do before I even had to ask. Now, my problem is I can't get anybody else to buy into Leslie World. You know, and that's the problem, is we all want our own little worlds to flow. But, and here's this person who, by the way, I promise to love, honor, and cherish until death, is not with the program. And so yeah. If they would just change, if they would just get with my program, and I tell people, yeah, that's exactly what your partner's thinking too. And so change is hard. It's scary, but it's one of, like death, it's the constant, you know.
Well, and you know, when I was in college, I was a psych major, and the biggest joke was, you know, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? Hmm? None. It has to want to change. You remember that joke?
Right.
No doubt. Well, that's it. They've got to want to change, and many partners don't. And I think part of the reason for that, and I mean, you're the expert here, but you're right. They don't know how to, or they think it's going to be work, that it's going to sacrifice relational quality. They have no idea. Or it's the P word, pride. And I'm sure you run into this as well, is it takes a bit of humility to acknowledge the possibility that your own behavior is contributing to relational problems or discord. But gosh, swallowing that pride, the opportunities for growth are endless. And you know what? Being humble only makes you more lovable. I mean, think about that. We love people that are humble. They're endearing. They're approachable. Mm-hmm. We want to spend time with them. Again, I go back to the win-win. But that pride problem, and I'm sure you have your techniques to dealing with that, but that sometimes is what causes people to refuse to change.
It is. And I wish we could talk about this more, because I think this is a great conversation. Unfortunately, I need to wrap it up. So can you tell people where they can find some more information about, you know, read the article that I found, or any other articles about how to increase their relationship satisfaction?
Well, my website is Wendy Patrick, PhD, and I have a column in Psychology Today. But yeah, it's great information. I'm glad we're talking about it. And I hope that people listen and consider it, because wouldn't it be great if everyone was so easily able to improve their marriages? That's what we want. We don't want a divorce rate. We want happy, healthy marriages till death do us part.
Great. So there's an adage that what one believes, one creates, and a lot of this has to do with what you focus on. And if you expect something to happen, you will often pay attention to the times it does and ignore when it doesn't. And this is true in marriage as well. So having positive expectations, as we've been talking about, is okay, as long as corresponding behavior is there too. So there is something to operationalizing your marriage vows. And so hopefully one of those things that will help you do that is to keep listening to this show. And so until next week, stay loving.